All right, Parshas Metzora. I believe this is our last class in a few weeks, for a few weeks, because of Yantif. But we'll talk about, for those who would like, we'll be talking more specifically or more focused on the Haggadah tomorrow, Mirat Hashem, tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Everyone's welcome to come in person or online. I know people are busy. You're getting preparations and things like that. So you're more than welcome to come online. It's the one time I encourage people to come on Zoom. Because I know people are busy, and I'm, you know, as we say in the Gemara, tefasta meruba lo tefasta, if you ask for too much, you're going to get nothing. So come on Zoom while you're doing your preparations. You can turn the camera off, just listen. So that we're going to focus more tomorrow on the Haggadah. Today we're focused a little on the Parsha. I always feel bad, not that the Parshios are, you know, animate objects that, you know, have feelings, but I always feel bad for shortchanging Parshios, and sometimes I do it, but for shortchanging Parshios just because they coincide with the Yantif. So we'll talk a little about Metzora. We'll connect it to Shir HaShirim, because that also gets shortchanged when it comes to Yantif. But Mirat Hashem, we will take it in stride. And again, everyone's welcome to come tomorrow night. Today, the Ida Sorsha Memorial Shir Chayavishka Bas Aaron Yo Memorial Shir is sponsored by David and Leah Unger. In loving memory of David's mother, Hannah Unger, who I never... Who used to come to the shiur? Oh, not since I was here, but... yeah, very nice, very nice. I've heard many good things. Yeah. I've heard very good things about her and Alex, right? And, yeah, I obviously see what the family is like, and I can only imagine that, you know, such a family who is invested in the way that they are in the shul and the Jewish community must have come from special people. So thank you to the Ungers for sponsoring Le'ilah Nishmasa, her neshama shehav and aliyah. Say again. Your father's yartzeit is today. Okay. He should have his neshama shehav and aliyah as well. So Parshas Metzora in the big blue book. You can find it on page 620. Which has the, I don't know if I should say the word unfortunate, but the gematria of 620 is karis. And we know that there are only two mitzvos in the Torah that you get karis for not doing. One is bris milah and one is karban pesach. So tis the season to get your karban pesach ready, otherwise you'll get karis. There you go. Parshas Metzora. As we know, this is a continuation of what we talked about last week in Tazria, getting tzaras. And Zos Tia Toras HaMetzora B'Yom Tara. So interestingly enough, last week in Parshas Tazria, it spoke about contracting Tzaras on the body, and then it finished the Parsha talking about contracting Tzaras on the clothing. And now, at the beginning of Parshas Metzora, we're talking about contracting Tzaras and making up for it. What is the process of atoning for, you know, finishing off the Metzora process? And there's some sort of weird things that maybe you're not familiar with, and shaving the body and bringing different things. I'm going to openly admit, Eschata Ayan Yer Maskir Hayom, there was a generic answer to last week's Parsha finds, but when I originally wrote the question, I assumed that these first couple of psukim were in last week's Parsha. And the Parsha find actually that I had in mind, Raina still got the generic one, which was that a sheep was mentioned last week, which was a connection to Pesach. But and somebody else got that, I think Sylvan Stern maybe. And but I was thinking in my mind, I was thinking that the word Ezov was a really interesting connection to Pesach. The Ezov is the hyssop bush that they would use to smear the blood on the doorpost for the Karban Pesach. In Mitzrayim. That was the one that I was thinking of, but it turns out that's actually in the beginning of this week's Parsha. It was not in the last week's Parsha, but I'm giving credit for a sheep. Somebody else said number 7. I'm sorry, it's just not too, it's not specific enough. It's not specific enough for Pesach. But anyways. Zosia Taras HaMetzora. The word Metzora, I don't think the word... Was the word Metzora in last week's Parsha? It probably was at some point. But either way, Metzora, I think the Medrash only says it on this week's Parsha, if I'm not mistaken. I remember talking about it once, that the Medrash talks about the word Metzora is really a conjunction of Motzi Ra, a a person who speaks poorly. And I believe the Medrash talks about, if you remember, the peddler. I think we've probably talked about this Medrash before. The peddler that goes town to town and says, "I've got the elixir of life. Who wants life?" And they say, "Oh, I want." There's a specific anamora. I can't remember who it was that says, "Oh, I would love some life." And he says, "Oh, you know what it is? It's in your tehillim." Right, that we say on Shabbos morning, who wants life? Nitzor l'shon chamira. Right, before it was a yeshiva boys choir song, it was a pasuk that if you want life, that you should hold your tongue back from speaking evil. Was it really? I guess I'm thinking of Shal Shalos Jr. That's right. Shal Shalos Jr. took their songs from other places, so that's a good point. Same song, same melody. I'm saying. You're saying there was a different one. Interesting. So the one, the Shashalos one is Mi Yishecha Feitzchaim. And then what's the rabbi's son? I'm trying to think. I know another one. Mi Yishecha Feitzchaim. Oh, Ev Yamim. Oh, Ev Yamim. Yeah, I know. I keep thinking about it. It would be too long. What would people think about me pitting? What would people think about, just know everything. What would people think about a YouTube playlist? Would that be good enough? Yeah, YouTube. I can't do Spotify. I mean, I can, but I don't know.
Yeah, but then you've got something to watch as well.
Yeah, anyways. Nitzor l'shoyin chameira. That's a beautiful song. That's a really beautiful, I forgot about that song.
That's beautiful.
Anyways, yeah.
So that,
what?
Sound like
Matisyahu. Yeah, okay, I'll take it. Anyways, that's Motzira. Motzira. That's what the Medrash says. And there's a whole question. Why the peddler? Why is he the right messenger for that message? But that's the Medrash in this week's Parsha. And then what do you do? You come and you bring the cedar wood and the hyssop bush, and you put them all together, and voila, he's Tahor. But the Rashi brings a fast. I've always been somewhat intrigued by the Medrash that Rashi talks about in terms of the cedar wood. The cedar wood is because it grows tall. Cedar trees grow tall. And then this person thought he was so haughty. And the hyssop bush is because he was so haughty, he should be brought down. So, well, wait a second. You can't have both of those. It's either teaching you what to be or what not to be. The cedar wood, Rashi is saying, oh, this part of it is to teach you what you shouldn't be. He's very tall. He's very haughty. He's very big. And the hyssop bush, oh, that's teaching you not to be. Well, why is it that way? Why can't it be the other way? And I think that the real answer is, I believe I saw Rabbi Yisachar Frand once quote someone who says it, but I don't remember who said it, that that in reality, it's necessary to have both, but only in a healthy way. You have to see yourself with some level of nobility, but you also have to see yourself with some level of humility, right? That's, Har Sinai was a mountain, but a small mountain, right? That's that same imagery, that you have to recognize that you're someone important, right? That, Bishvili Nivra Ha'olam, as Rav Simcha Bonim says, in one pocket, and in the other pocket, Anochi Afar Ve'efer. You can't have only one of those, but you also can't have neither of those, right? You have to have both in the right quantities. So that's, I believe, what's going on here. And in the same sense that some people who are haughty are actually very insecure, right? In the opposite direction, an unhealthy balance of this would be that you're so insecure about yourself, you're really a hyssop bush. But on the outside, the way that you compensate for that insecurity is by being really haughty. Right, by sort of trying to show your dominance or expressing your dominance or exerting your dominance, the word I was looking for, exerting your dominance because you're a small person. And small people try to justify themselves by presenting as bigger people. And really, they're smaller. And if they would just be a little more vulnerable, they would have, they would have a lot more sympathies from people. And they'd be able to grow. Right, if you're pretending to be someone you're not, so you're constantly putting on a farce. So that's what I think also is implicit in this Rashi about the big cedar, the small hyssop. It's really about that balance, and a healthy way of balancing it is the key. And this is, you see the rest of the beginning of this page 620 and 622 is all about where to do how to mix all these ingredients and then also the top of 622 or most of 622 is talking about, you know, putting on the ear and on the thumb and the foot and the whole thing. It's a whole process. I'm sure there's a lot of symbolism and all of that. I can't remember all of it right now. And then the bottom talks about if you're a poor person, the Metzora can bring different kinds of offerings, not the animals, but the ingredients, and then the birds. Yeah. And then you find, which we'll talk about, we'll focus on a little bit at the bottom of 624, we'll focus on the tzaras on the house. Tzaras on the house, you know, the obvious question is, why didn't we talk about this before? You had the person, the clothing, and we took a little break to talk about how you can purify yourself from it, and then also you could have it on the house. Why don't you put it together with everything else? Right? Why didn't go person, clothing, and then house instead of breaking it up by talking about the purification process? I'm not really sure. I'm sure there might be a more pshat-oriented aspect of it, because maybe the house has more details about what to do to the house. But we had details also with the garments too. I believe either the Medrash or the Mefarshim explain that while the Torah presentation of it is person, clothing, house, in reality it went the opposite direction. It was house, clothing, person. It was almost like incremental messages being sent to the person. First, your house gets a big blotch on it, and you should take that as a message. That's your wake-up call. You missed it? Okay, now it's going to get even closer, and it's going to come on your clothing. You missed it? Now it's going to go on your body. You can't escape it, right? So that's sort of like the incremental alarming that Hashem sends. But that's what you find here at the top of 626, perhaps one of, you know, used to be one of my favorite drushas. Still like it, but just learned a lot more. Kenega nir aliba bias. Kenega nir aliba bias. It's a affliction, it seems to me, it's like an affliction, it seems to me, on the house. It's like it, seems to me. What are we talking about? Rashi says, Afilu Talmud Chacham, even the most wisest of men, Sheyodea Shu Negavadai, who knows explicitly that it is, knows definitively that it is actually Taras, Lo Yivsuk Dever Bar Lomar Neganirli, he should not say, I have an affliction on my house. He should not say that. Ella, kinega, it's like an affliction. So there are two ways of understanding this. One is only a Kohen can say such a thing, right? You declaring that it is a nega is not actually truthful, because it's not a nega until we say it's a nega, right? It's only considered teras when the Kohen says so. If you remember, I think a couple of years ago, I only noticed because I looked at my notes last week for something, and I think we spoke about how the Mishnah says if a chassan contracts tzaras, so we don't, the Kohen doesn't say anything, right? We don't say anything because let the chassan enjoy first, you know, give him shever brachos, then we'll ruin his life, you know, but let him enjoy his kala, all the wedding preparations, the wedding hall and all the food, and then he gets tzaras. It's almost like, you know, lahavdil COVID, you know, all those weddings that, oh, Nebuch, the cousin couldn't go to the wedding because she had COVID, or the mother, whatever. Right, that happened too. That happened too, because the person did go to the wedding, yeah. Either way, so it's coded like that, but it's obviously it's a spiritual malady. So until the Kohen says it, it doesn't actually true. It's not actually true. So here, when the person sees the blotch, until he verbalizes it by the Kohen, it's not actually the truth. It's not Taras. So that's why when the person sees it on their house, they literally can't say the words, Nega Nira Liba Bias. It is Taras on my house, because it's not Taras on your house. It looks like Taras, and it might be, but it's not Taras until the Kohen says so. That's one way of interpreting this. The other way of interpreting Rashi, that you can't say, even a Talmud Chacham can't say that this is Taras, is because even if something seems so clear to you, you never know. You never know. Even if something is clear as day, I know for sure, and this has happened to me, you know, oh, I know that halacha. You know, someone asked me, oh, yeah, I know that one. And then I have to call them back with my tail between my legs and say, I'm sorry, I thought I knew that one. But the truth is, I looked into it a little bit more, and that's, you know, something I have to keep in mind for Pesach-wise. Lots of shilas coming up. I told someone this a couple days ago. This is the week of, I know that one, but I'm not going to say anything right yet. I know that one, but let me look at it first. You know, is this chametz? Of course not. It's raw. Someone asked me last night, are raw mushrooms chametz? No, of course not. Like, why would raw mushrooms be chametz? It's just there are some people that say, we don't pass like this, there are some people that say that there's a certain, some kind of wheat moisture, like, is attracted by the mushroom, and it globs onto it, and by the time people eat it, it's not there anymore. But there's some kind of thing that, like, attaches to it. I don't know why, but...
Stick with chicken and potatoes.
Chickens can be complicated, too, believe it or not. But, yeah. Yeah, anyone know the whole thing with the eggs, the milk and the eggs? I'm sure... You get them before Pesach, right? It's a chumrah on top of a chumrah, but we're makbid for the extent that you can. If you need to buy in the middle of Pesach, you can do that too. You can be lenient, like Rav Moshe is. But that's because, anyone know why that is?
No.
It's
because...
The chicken or the egg? Both. The reason why you buy milk and eggs before Pesach, it's a whole long thing, but part of the reason is because the chicken... and the cow have been eating chametz.
And it's a question of your...
And it could be that some of that chametz is in the milk. It's a whole machlokas in the Gemara about whether we consider that zev zegorim type of thing. We're not getting into a complicated understanding of it. Maker adin, it's not a problem. But when it comes to chametz, as you know, chametz is the one great boogie monster that, you know, oh no, there might be a little bit of chametz in, you know, okay, so we're not going to do it. So better to have it before Yontif, because then it's considered like it's a hetera bala, not isura bala, which we're not going to talk about. But the point is that chickens could be complicated too. Everything can be complicated. Even bottled water is complicated.
It could still have the chametz in there,
right. But
because you sold it?
No, that's not why. That's not why. It's because we don't consider it to be, we're more lenient to be, it's not exactly bittul, but it's sort of bittul. We're more lenient when it's produced before Pesach to say that that wasn't, there's nothing usser about that thing, right? It's not usser to eat bread, or in this case, you know, kernels of wheat before Pesach. So when it's in the animal before Pesach, we are more lenient, not more lenient, we're not machmir to say, oh, you have to consider that like chametz and whatever, because now it's been subsumed in the animal and whatever, it's an okay thing to be in the animal. Once it's Pesach, though, yeah, some people are more machmir about that because, you know, chametz is asur b'mashrus, even the smallest amount of thing that gets into the milk gets into the eggs, so it could be a problem. Anyways, everything's complicated. The point is, everything's more complicated than you think. And even, you know, raw nuts. I was just looking at raw nuts. You know, some industries will use certain oils to clean off the nuts. And those oils could be problematic oils, right? So it depends. Everything depends. Everything depends.
I'm trying to think of the house
that
you before Pesach, but before...
No, it can't even. We get our milk from non-kosher places. What?
I can see how the milk can be contaminated.
It's part of what creates the milk, is all the nutrients in the cow's body.
So they have to change the cow's diet before?
No, they don't have to. This is all chumrah. As Rav Chanoch Teller would say, it's a chumrah on steroids. But we're makbid for it. We do chumrahs on steroids for Pesach. We don't eat corn. Why? Because.
No,
you know, it's just because.
They sort of decided coffee was chumrahs because it's a bean. I mean, you know.
Oh, no. Coffee is okay. Ground coffee, then we're at questions about how it's processed. This is not a chametz shir. Yeah, but the point is, things are complicated, and therefore we say, kenega nira liba bias. It looks like it could be chametz. It could be tzaras. Okay. Right? We always add that little bit of, lack of certitude to make sure that people are just humble enough to say, I don't absolutely know.
With tzaras, was there any isolation of those people? I mean, people could see, if you could see it.
With the house, no.
It wasn't physically.
With the house, you would leave your house in terms of isolation from that.
On your body, I mean, people could see it, or it was on your
clothes. Right,
so
right.
So did people think it was physically?
No, I don't think so. No. It wasn't contagious in that way.
No.
It wasn't like leprosy or other physical ailments where you have to stay away from the person and contamination. It wasn't like that. Some people interpret it like that.
Right.
Maybe some more rational, historic, you know, academics, you know, look at it that way. But we don't look at it that way. And they're all different colors, as you can see on page 626. all different things that might happen to the house. And then you knock down the house. We'll talk about that soon. And then you take it all outside. We've talked about before you knock down the house, you make the person take all their stuff out of the house. And the person, one of the reasons, if you remember last week, one of the reasons why you get tzaras is tsarut ayin, right? Stinginess. One way of understanding it is stinginess. And one thing that we do is we take all the stuff out of the house. And the drasha on that is, you're so stingy, but look at all the stuff you have. You have so many things. You have so many things. Why are you being so stingy? You could spare to offer something to somebody else. And that's why we take all the stuff out. All right, we take all the stones away. And then because we're talking about impurities, so we throw in the Zav and the Zava questions. Male and female discharges, which make you tame, which we're not going to talk about. Yeah, but there are a lot of halachos that have to do with that. How do we apply that in modern context is somewhat unknown, at least to me. But generally, how to apply it today is not clear, especially because we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. We don't have the same levels of tumah and tara concerns that they did back then. Nonetheless, it's a halacha in the Torah. Okay, let's move on back to the house for a second. So the pasuk says in Vayikra Yud Dalet Lamed Gimel and Lamed through Lamed Hey, 14:33. When you come to Eretz Canaan, which is a very interesting precursor or introduction to the halachos of tzaras on the house, what does that have to do with Eretz Yisrael? Kisavo el Eretz Canaan. Why should it be that your homes in Eretz Yisrael get tzaras? So we talked a little bit about that last week, how only the most spiritual of people get tzaras because it was a malady for people that were supposed to be on a higher level. So maybe you can say the same thing about Eretz Yisrael. It says, Asher anino sein lachem la'achuza, that I give to you as an inheritance, meaning, you know, I'm going to bring tzaras when it's your own stuff. You got to be responsible for your own stuff before you get to Eretz Yisrael. It's not your own stuff. You know, you're borrowing our homes today are not our homes. Our home is in Eretz Yisrael. Sure, for sure. I would say that, especially, I mean, I don't know, higher level, but that higher level is also applied to our homes, right? The higher level that we were on. And I will give, very interesting phrase, I will give tzaras on the homes of your ancestral land. I will give. What is this, some kind of present? Oh, thanks very much, Hashem. Thank you for the present, right? Natati means I shall give. Vinatati means I shall give. Oh, you shouldn't have, you know? What does it mean, vinasati, nega taras? What does that mean? I gave you taras. So what does Rashi say famously? Vinasati nega taras. Besora hi lahem. It is a good thing for them. Shehanegaim ba'im alayhem. It's good that taras came on their homes. Why? You know this one from the front cover of the little midrash says, I think it's in one of those. Lefi sheitz minu amoreim matmonios shel zahav, because the Amorites would store their gold in the walls of their homes. Bekiros batayim kol arbaim shana sheis rabba midbar. I don't know why only those 40 years, but that's where they stored their money. V'yalidei hanega, and through the tzaras no seitz habayis umotzan. They would knock down the house and they say, oh, look, treasure. Oh, I think it'll cover a new house. You know, it'll be hopefully, just the right amount of money for me to rebuild my house. No, I'm sure it was more than that. But it is strange.
It's like a reward for.
Oh, so what is the reward for? Yeah, so this is our question. What is this whole rigmarole? Why can't Hashem just give us money? Right? What? You had to make us knock down the house? I love that house. That was my favorite house. You gave me tzaras to knock down the house so I could find the treasure. Just give me the treasure. You know, people know that story, the Hasidic story that's interpreted in both directions about the guy who found treasure under his oven. You know this one. You have to know this one. I've heard this 100 times. I've said it 100 times. a guy has a dream that there is treasure in such and such a place. I don't remember. Warsaw. He goes to the Warsaw under a specific bridge, and he's scoping out the bridge, and they've got this, you know, not troll, but, you know, some guard that not letting anybody pass without proper justification, Mrs. Snow knows what I'm talking about. And he sits there day and night waiting for this guard to just go away so he could dig a little bit under the bridge, because he had this dream that he's going to have this bridge. And then he goes, finally, the guard's like, "Guy, what are you doing here? I've seen you. You've been here for 3 days. What's your deal?" I'm shortening it, obviously, more dramatic than I'm saying it. And he goes and he says, "Well, look, I had this dream over a few nights, same dream over and over again, says that, I've got to dig under this bridge to get the treasure that's, you know, waiting for me." And the guard said, "That's so strange. Are you Yasala from, Lublin?" He's like, "Yeah. How did you know?" He said, "Because I had the same dream that there's going to be this guy, Yasala of Lublin, and he's got treasure under his oven in his own house." He says, "Oh, really? The treasure is not under this bridge. It's in my own house." And he goes back home and he unearths beneath the oven. Look, there's treasure right there. So that's the mashal. Did it happen? Probably not. But what's the mashal? What's the nimshal? So it depends who you ask. Some Hasidic rabbis use this story to teach you that in order to realize your own treasure, you have to go travel to the Rebbe. And the Rebbe will allow you to see your own worth. And then some say, no, you don't have to travel to a Rebbe. You can stay home and there's value where you are. So it depends. But the point is that where's the treasure? It's in your own home. But sometimes you have to dig out your house in order to find it. Now, I don't know how that applies to Tsaras. I don't know if the story was inspired by Tsaras. But that's what's going on here, that Hashem makes the house contract Tsaras so that you knock it down so that you can find the treasure. So is this a good thing or a bad thing? Very hard to figure out. Why do we have to do the whole thing? So let's ask that question. The Maskil of David explains in source number 3, V'nasati v'chuli besora tova, says Rashi, perish, I'm going to read through these acronyms, dekashale, it was difficult for Rashi. What's bothering Rashi? I maiksiv v'nasati. Why did it say, and I gave you as like a present? V'yachas v'yiches hara l'kadosh baruch hu. And it's saying that Hashem is the one that gave us Tsaras. Ha'amrinan, we say, Ein davar ra yorid min hashamayim. Hashem doesn't give us bad things, only good things. Even punishments are good things. V'havale l'meim, it should have said, K'dil'el gavi nigeh guf ha-beged. It should have said the same phrasing as it did when it came to the body or when it came to the garments. V'su, amai, we need, didn't say v'nasati, you know, v'nasati neged Tsaras. Doesn't say, I'll give you a present of Tsaras on your clothes. Never said that. Okay. And then, V'havalei l'meimar, V'su, and furthermore, Amai natar kra milichtov nigeh bayis ad hacha. Why did it wait until talking about the house Tsaras until now? Chutz l'mkomam. Outside of where it should have been. Dehavale lememar should have been said beperik delael in the previous, or the parsha delael, in the previous chapter, Eitzel nigi haguf ha-beged, it should have been placed over there. Right? It should have been over there. It should have been phrased the same way as over there. Hasam nami should have been said over there. V'havale lememar v'habayis yabo nega taras. Umeshani, and it should have said, and the house that has taras, just like it said right over there. Umeshani derime sakasa. What does Rashi say? Meshani, he explains, Rimes hakasuv besora tova liYisrael, that Hashem is giving us good tidings. Asks the Maskil Davi, Af agav debayim gan keniga batim laonesh, even though Tsaras is usually a penalty, and it typically is a penalty. Uch darmina and ein bal hanafashos pagebe nafashos tchila elabitzchila bayim alabatim v'chule, that a person is not punished directly or immediately with Tsaras on the body, but rather it first starts with the home and then to the clothing. Even though that's the case, that is a punishment. That is the form of punishment of Tsaras on the house. Mikol makom, nonetheless, b'tchilas b'yasan l'aretz, when the Jewish people first got to Eretz Yisrael, that Tsaras was different. Mi'alo bo derech onesh, this one was not a punishment at all. Ela derech schar, v'zer ramaz kan hakasuv, that's what Hashem is saying here. Usually, in the future, Tsaras on the house is a punishment. But the first time, this is get out of jail free card. This is one where you don't have to worry about it. I'm just doing it so you knock down the house. I'm just showing you where the gold, the treasures are. That's basically what I'm doing. The question then would become, wait a second. If the houses, I'm not questioning the Maskil of David, I'm sure he thought of this and has an answer for it. I'm just saying, for our understanding, there's still something to be explained, which is, as the Parsha talks about, and as we'll see soon, the process for knocking down a house with tsaras is not immediate. You have to wait. You sort of scrape it off the wall. You see if it comes back, as we'll see in the next source. And then only after 7 days, if it comes back, so then you knock down the house. But if it's all for the purposes of collecting the treasure, so then it should say, when you come into the land that first time, just knock the house down right away. Don't do the whole scraping and the waiting and just knock it down. But that's not what it says. The Pesukim never say that. So according to the Maskil David, you still have this question, like, why are we waiting? Why are we scraping? If the homes with tsaras at our first entrance into Eretz Yisrael are the ones with the treasures, and it's not a punishment in any way, so just say, if you have homes when you get into Eretz Yisrael that have tsaras on them, knock them down and get the treasure. It doesn't say that. So it can't be understood only like that. The Sisei Chachamim asks similarly in the bottom source, Yesh machim tenach benegah chozer, that makes sense when it comes to a tsaras which comes back, right? That, you know, you scraped it off and then it comes back afterwards. That's when you knock down the house. But what about benegah shein chozer, ma'ikol ameimar? What if it's the kind of tsaras that you scrape it off and now it's not there anymore? So wait a second, does this house have treasure or does it not have treasure? You told me, Rashi, that when there's tsaras on the house, that means there's treasure. Don't worry about it, b'sar tova. But now you're telling me that it's not, I don't have to knock down my house, right? If it scrapes and it doesn't come back, then I never knock down. So what am I going to do with the treasure in my wall? Right? Do I have to knock down the house or not? If it's not coming back, that means I don't knock it down, but there's treasure. So what am I supposed to do? Drill a hole and take it out in a different way. So says the Sif Sechem, what's going on? The od yesh machshim. There are other questions. Ha aminu perak yesh be'erichin denige batim ba'amai de'avon tzarasayim. That the Gemara says, I think it's supposed to be erichin, but the Gemara says in erichin explicitly that the tzaras comes because of stinginess. The tzaras in the house comes because of stinginess. So which one is it? Is it a good thing or is it a bad thing? Says a little bit of a difficult one to understand, but this is what he says. V'nira techada mitaretes b'chaverta. One question is answered by the other. Devadai hanega shel batim b'machmas avera. Of course, nobody guessed saras unless they did something wrong. Full stop. It's always a bad thing. You've always done something wrong when you get saras. However, ela shezeh chesed kel yisparach. She'efshar, it's possible, shelifamim yimashich tova min ha'onesh, that good things can come from punishments. Dehainu shetamun, that you might get treasure. Vizeu nichla b'loshen cham tova me'ayin ra, vizu hi habesora. What's the good tidings? It might be a good thing in the end of the day. Now, if you were to ask me, how's that happen? I don't know. Maybe you did good tshuva. Maybe you did well. But you can't do too well, because if you do tshuva right away, you're not going to knock down the house. So, I don't know. But that's the Sif Chacham's approach. That it, yes, it's because you're being punished, but some people take punishments better than others. Right? And as I've quoted before, probably more in the Mishle class, but one of the books that I bought but never read or listened to is a book called The Black Box Thinking. Black Box Thinking is about the black box that you have on an airplane. Right, and when something goes wrong, they try to find the black box because it's got all the recordings and you can figure out what happened. So I've never read it, but I love the thesis so much that I bought it at a used bookstore. And it's all about, you know, how do we deal with our mistakes? We do something wrong, so do you look at the black box or you just push it aside and say, okay, moving on? Or do you say, I made a mistake, what did I do wrong, how can I grow from it? And that's presumably what's going on here. You get the tsaras on your house. You get the message. Okay, how am I going to grow from it? If you grow from your mistake, this is all my editorializing of the Sisal Chachamim, which I'm sure he doesn't appreciate, but how much do you grow from it? How much do you do? How do you improve? How do you become better? If you become better enough, if you actually do tshuva, so then Hashem will make sure you find treasure when you knock down the house. But if you don't, so then that person didn't get the treasure. Maybe that's how you can explain the Sisal Chachamim. The Eish Kodesh, however, the Piazes Nareba. I don't think I told this story yet. A few weeks ago, around Purim time, maybe I said it in my Mishle class. My Mishle class is basically just my, a non-ending stream of my consciousness. Here I'm a little more controlled, but a few weeks ago, I had a what seemed like a mashulach come to the door. And my wife, Ricky, you know, it was like 10 p.m. And she's like, I am not opening the door. We've got a Ring doorbell. So she sees who it is. Like, okay, we're not doing mashulachim at 10 p.m. That's, you know, that's one step too far, you know. And she's calling me and I was out, whatever. And she says, you know, can you come home? There's a guy at the door. I'm like, okay, I just got here. I'll talk to him. So I get to the door. And I said, sorry, I don't have any cash on me. Is there like a pamphlet or something? I'll do it online. And he said, I'm not here to ask you for money. Are you the rabbi of the Young Israel of Oak Park? And I said, yes, I am. Happened to be, I was wearing like exercise clothing. I'm like, excuse my presentation right now. I didn't expect someone at 10 p.m. to come to the door. And he said, I have no idea how he heard this, but he said, I heard that you gave a class in the Eish Kodesh. Really, not the Eish Kodesh, but in the Chovas HaTalmidim, the P.S.S.'s other famous work, which I've quoted a few times. But we used to have on Sunday mornings, pre-COVID, we had a Sunday morning brunch or breakfast chabura, where we would go through the Chovas HaTalmidim. We have a few copies in the front, talking about, it's like a person's guide to how to learn and how to, you know, be a good, you know, studier of Torah. Either way, so I said, yeah, it's true. And so he gives me a book and he says, I wrote this book with interlinear, you know, analyses. I thought maybe you'd want it. This is in Hebrew, broken English, in Hebrew, whatever. And then we get to talking. And we're just talking about different drushas for the P.S.S. and the Rebbe. And we're having a great time. And Ricky keeps calling me. And I know why she's calling me. She wants to pretend like she needs me inside so that I'm not stuck with the mashulach anymore. And I had to explain. I kept refusing the call because I was having a good time in my exercise clothing at, you know, 10 p.m. So she got a few good pictures of me in my exercise clothing talking to a Hasidish guy, you know, over learning. But that's the Piazetzner Rebbe. And just this morning, I saw a wonderful little photo of the Piazetzner Rebbe in Beit Shemesh. Apparently, the different Piazetzner Rebbes. But the Piazetzner Rebbe in Beit Shemesh, who is a great-grandfather, he was sitting with his son waiting for the bus. It was just like a very, like, you know, heartwarming picture of this Hasidish Rebbe waiting with his grandchild for the bus to come. Anyways, so this is the P.S.S.N. Rebbe. And he has, if you remember the story of the P.S.S.N. Rebbe, which is why I was drawn towards him, which I talked about him at Tisha B'Av too, he was an unbelievable person in his own right, before the Holocaust even came. But during the Holocaust, so he was the comforting voice in the Warsaw Ghetto, right? And he would give these drushas. And the Eish Kodesh, which has its own miraculous story about how he had written it down, or the Shomer Shabbos underground publishing group, if you remember the story, they had taken his manuscripts of this commentary to Chumash, which were his drushas that he gave in the Warsaw Ghetto. They put them in these milk canisters and they buried them underground. And then 10 years after the war, they found them. They were excavating. They were building a new, you know, apartment complex or something. And they found them, and they got them to the rightful owner. And that's why we have this book that we're about to read from. It's because they were buried underground and excavated. Who knows how many other Sfarim that we haven't recovered because they're underground somewhere in Poland. Anyways, this is the Eish Kodesh, this is the P.S.S. Rebbe. This is a drusha he gave to Jews struggling in the Warsaw Ghetto on Parshas Metzora. Okay? V'hinei b'kavanas haTorah mitzvaseh ein lanu hasaga. We can't really understand what's going on in the Torah, why Hashem tells us what he tells us. Aval, however, this whole episode with the knocking down in the house, Masha Miram is Lanu Efshar, Ki Yodim Uma Min Manachnush Ko Masha Hashem Oselanu, the Dalit sometimes is referring to Hashem, because we believe, we know and we believe that everything Hashem does for us, Afilu Kechash V'Shalom Melaka Osanu, even when it seems like he's hitting us, Hakol tova, it's all for the better. Remember where he's saying this, in the Warsaw Ghetto. Avak sheroem ka'es. But when we see things like today, shelo b'yesodi haguf levad malako osanu, he's not just hitting us physically. He's not just making us sick. But rak gam b'dvarim shechas v'sholom marchikim him osanu imenu yisparach. Even in areas which seem to making us distant from Hashem. Distant from Hashem. Ein cheder Le tinoko shel beis rabban, there's no schooling for the children, which was what he did. He was a school Rosh Yeshiva of a cheder for little kids. Velo yeshiva, and there's not a yeshiva for the older kids. Lo beis hamedrash, no study hall. Lispal b'tzibor, there's no shul or beis medrash for us to daven, v'lo mikveh, and we don't have a mikveh to go to, v'chadom, and similarly, oh, as, therefore, chas v'shalom, safeg chashash ola b'kirbenu, then we have this creeping doubt. Ha'efshar, shegam ata kavanasi yisbarach letova, is it possible that even this is for the better? Maybe Hashem is chas v'shalom, wanting to distance himself from us. Because he's taking away our chumashim, he's taking away our learning, he's taking away our davening, he's taking away our kids' education. So maybe that's a message that we should not be getting close to Hashem. Hashem doesn't want this anymore, chas v'shalom. Im l'tova, hayalol yasrenu b'divarim, shi'ikarbu osanu elav. He should be hurting us in ways that will make us grow closer to him, not in ways that are going to distance us. V'lo bitl Torah u'tfila v'chas v'shalom kimat kol ha'Torah. And not by nullifying Torah from us or davening from us. It seems chas v'shalom like the entire Torah. The ha'im ein zos chas v'shalom yisurim shel v'yashlichem. Are these not yisurim, afflictions, that are basically Hashem's way of casting us off? Lachain, therefore, says the Piyazesna Rebbe in the Warsaw Ghetto, privately, on the Parsha of Mitzora, he said, therefore, Ro'im ba Torah, we see in the Torah, Shagam shenegabatim temeya umetama haisa, even though the homes were impure, and they made other people impure. Mikomakom asaba Hashem shlichus l'tovas Yisrael. Hashem still was willing to make it a good thing for the Jewish people. Mitzchila temeya zayin yamim. And yeah, it would be off limits and impure for 7 whole days. There's going to be some difficult times where you're not going to be able to be home. V'achar kach, however, after all of those difficult times, after that waiting period of affliction, that waiting period of impurity, nisgala hamatzmon, you will see the light afterwards. You'll see the treasure. V'lachein tzarcha ish lomar rak hanega nirali. That's why a person has to say, it seems to me like it's an affliction. Because that's all it is. It only seems to you as an affliction. V'afilu tamar chacham sheyodeh shenega hi rak nega yomar. Lahanal. That the Talmud Chacham only says, it seems to me, even though it looks like a really bad thing, it really looks like tzaras, it really looks like a bad thing. Mipnei sheha'ish b'yatzmo enu yachol lomar. A person themselves cannot say that. Im hi be'emes nega upega rak shelo nira kenega haya yachol lomar. Ava be'emes. It looks like an affliction, but in truth, tova hi l'Yisrael asher yetiv Hashem imanu. Says the Piyazetzin Rebbe, in the Warsaw Ghetto, saying to everybody else, this looks like a real nega, ka nega nirali. We don't know what Hashem has in store for us afterwards, and we can't play God in terms of understanding why bad things happen, especially the Holocaust, you know, what I don't have to explain to you how difficult that is to understand. But you do see the types of things that have happened since then. The establishment of Eretz Yisrael, the establishment of the yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael and in America and other places, that we've seen a proliferation of Yiddishkeit after the war that we've never seen. Does that mean that's what Hashem's plan? I can't tell you that. But I can definitely say that we've found treasures after the war. We've definitely found treasures. Unfortunately, you know, Hashem's way of getting to this point was by knocking down houses, by destroying. But the point that Pizdesna Rebbe was saying to his Talmidim was, sometimes you have to go through tzaras and we don't understand why. But afterwards, there are matzmonim to be found. There are treasures to be found. So yes, it's bad. Coming back to Sisa Chamim, it's bad, difficult times. But there are things that happen afterwards that we don't truly understand until later. Some people say that about Maror. That Maror itself can only be appreciated after Pesach Matzah. Right? We say at the end of the Seder. Right? That... Right, Kol Adam Shelo Yomar Shlosha Devarim BePesach Yodoliyatsi DeChavaso. Right, Rabbi Gamliel, I think it is. If you don't say these three things, you're not Yotzei. What are they? Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. Wait a second. What does Maror represent? Bitterness. So which came first, Pesach, Matzah, or Maror? Maror. So why are we doing Maror later? Why is it Pesach first, then Matzah, then Maror? Pesach should be second. Maror represents the servitude. Then the Pesach represents while we were in Egypt, we made this carbon Pesach. And then Matzah, at least, you know, the way we understand it is that I was on the way out. even though it happened already before that, not going to get to that. The point is that Maror should be first. And the truth is, the reason is because we don't appreciate Maror's value until after Pesach and Matzah. Because it was through Pesach and Matzah that we appreciated that the Maror was all for this purpose of getting out of Egypt, going to Eretz Yisrael, of having the mitzvahs that we have. So same type of thing. There's a beautiful pasuk and a beautiful medrash that I once heard in Shir HaShirim, which, you know, speak about ambiguities we can't understand. That's Shir HaShirim in a nutshell, right? The Chazal wanted to say we shouldn't include it in the canon of Tanakh because it's too cryptic. It's too hard for us. And I think it's Rabbi Akiva that says, no, Shir HaShirim is the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Not only is it not to be left out, it's the most holy, right? It's the intimacy letter between Hashem and the Jewish people. So in one point, part of that ambiguity is some of these psukim I can't tell you about. Alginas, I go, Zirarati, I went down to the nuts farm. Liros bi'ibe hanachal, to look at the stream. Liros ha'parcha agafen, did the grapes develop yet? Hein yetu amir harimonim. The pomegranates harvestable yet? And then if you say, lo yadati nafshi samasti markavos aminadif. I did not know nafshi samasni, I think mostly is understood as my desires overtook me, something like that. But the Medrash says otherwise. Listen to this beautiful Medrash. Lo yadati nafshi samasni. I didn't know nafshi. I didn't know my own soul. Tani Rabbi Chia. Mashal v'as malachim shaysam laketes bashlafen. That this is akin to a girl who was truly a princess, who was collecting sheaves of wheat in the field. Nimtza hamelech over, and the king was passing by one day, v'hikir shibito, and the king sees, oh my gosh, that's my daughter. I haven't seen her in such a long time, I never knew what happened to her. Here she is, working in the field, collecting sheaves of wheat. Sholach ohavo netala v'hoshiva imo bakronin, that the king's aide went, took her out of the working field and brought her to the palace. V'hayu chavroseha tameos aleha, and all of her friends were in wonderment, bewildered. Tameos aleha v'omros, and they asked, Esmol haysam laketes bashlafim, just yesterday you were with us in the field on your knees harvesting the wheat. V'hayom yosheves bakronin ha'melech, and today you're sitting in the palace of the king. And what does the princess say back? Amra lehem, k'shem she'atem tameo salai, just like you're wondering about me, kach ani tameo alatzmi, I'm wondering about myself too. I don't know how this happened. V'karas al atzma lo yadati nafshi samasni. And she says about herself, I never knew my own soul. I never knew how special I was myself. Kach, says the Medrash. K'shah Yisrael b'Mitzrayim yishubad mititul uveinim. When the Jewish people were in Mitzrayim and they were working with the, you know, the mortar and the bricks. V'ayum ustinu b'zuyin b'eini ha'mitzrayim. And they were disgusted, you know, and they were disgraced by the Egyptians. Uchshenasu b'nei Yisrael, uchshenasu b'nei Chorin, when they became free people, v'nigalu, they were doomed, v'nas ganim akol b'olam, and they became the princes of the world. So what happened? V'hayu umos ha'olam tameos v'omros. All the nations of the world said in wonderment, Esmol ha'yisem ovdim b'titu levenim, just yesterday you were slaves working in the dirt of Egypt. And today, what are you? You're the princes, the children of Hashem being taken out in such glory. And the Jewish people say back to the nations of the world, just like you're wondering about us, how could this happen to us? We're wondering that to be ourselves. We're wondering that ourselves. And the Jewish people say, we sit at the Haggadah, you know, Mirtz Hashem, Monday night. Lo yadati nafshi samasni. We were slaves for hundreds of years. And look where we are now. Look at the prosperity that we have now. And I think in the same way, we think about, you know, tsaras on the homes as a symbol of difficult times. As the Ish Kodesh said, a symbol of whether it's affliction, persecution, you know, animosity among other people, And then ultimately we find this treasure. Ultimately we're redeemed. Ultimately Hashem takes care of us, and we think to ourselves, wow, I never knew all along the kind of providence that Hashem was having for us, even if it was difficult. And a lot of people are discussing that this year. What kind of Seder can we have, when our family and friends in Eretz Yisrael are under the same, not the same, but under their own types of persecution, and under their own kinds of mishubadim, right? They're also subjugated to different things, and we still say, we still praise Hashem as being, skanam al kol ha'olam, that Hashem's watching out for us. And sometimes it's easier to say that, sometimes it's harder to say that. But the point that we remind ourselves of is that even in times of Mitzrayim, even in those times, the Jewish people didn't know their own worth. Lo yadati nafshi samasi, it only took until the end for them to realize that it was all for the good, it was all with Hashem's help, it was all with Hashem's guidance. As we saw, unfortunately, Motzei Shabbos, that difficulty that became a miracle, about 331, I heard. 31? I heard 331. The reason why I heard that is because someone made a drasha. They said, Shalo echad bilvad omer aleinu l'chaloseinu. The word shalo is gematria 331. Shalo echad bilvad. It wasn't just one nation that tried to kill us, but it was every generation that tried to kill us. Shalo echad bilvad omer aleinu l'chaloseinu. 331 rockets tried to kill us. And Hashem hatzilenu miyadam, Hashem saved us from that. So as difficult as times have been, the Esh Kodesh's message rings clear that there is treasure afterwards to be found. It's not always visible at the time, but we have that level of emuna, and we have that kind of commitment to the Torah and mitzvot, because we know Hashem's watching, Hashem is going to take care of us in the end of the day. I wish everyone a Chag Kasher v'Sameach. Thank you to the Ungers for sponsoring. Han Ungers, Shama Shav and Aliyah. And Amir Tashem, we should hold strong on Leil Shimurim, on Pesach, to recognize this message, that as bleak as things sometimes seem, Hashem is watching and Hashem is going to take care of us as long as we're committed to Him. Okay, everyone should have a good day. Tomorrow night is at 8 o'clock. Yes, 8 o'clock because of Mincha. Everyone is invited, not just women. Yeah. Everyone should be well.